and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. My name is Mark Williams, and I am speaking to you from sunny Cambridgeshire in the UK. My podcast guest this week is Michael Sharp from Titan LNG. Titan LNG is one of the leading LNG fuel suppliers. It's experienced in truck-to-ship and ship-to-ship refueling across the world. Titan's fleet of flex-fueler LNG barges operate in the ARA region. In addition to these, Titan operates chartered LNG carriers. As Commercial Director Marine, Michael leads the development of the marine and bunkering proposition for Titan LNG. Michael has an expansive background in LNG bunkering, gas and energy supply, predominantly in the commercial and trading activities for physical suppliers, including Shell, Argos Bunkering and Good Fuels. Michael has degrees from HU, University of Applied Sciences, Utrecht, and Nyanoura Business University. He now works in the ARA region. So, Michael, thank you for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Mark, for the introduction and the invitation to have a dialogue with you. I'm looking forward.
That's great. Well, we're always happy to have people who own and operate ships on board, because that's a perspective that comes from both sides. You know, you're both in the fueling and the ship operating space. And I'd like to start with that, actually. So how many LNG bunker vessels are you operating now?
We are operating two inland waterway barges, so you can't necessarily call them vessels, but the two barges, which is the Flexular 001 and 002, are currently trading inside the ARA region. And we have a long-term charter of a LNG bunker vessel and a Green G Bruges, which we chartered from MYK at the moment. And we are looking to do some more, actually. Maybe we can talk on that a little bit later.
Yeah, I suppose the names Flex Fueler 001 and 002, I suppose, indicate an ambition to grow the fleet in numbers.
Yes, it would sound that way. It's a little bit of an inside joke in Titan, where we do have enormous ambitions, but I wouldn't foresee hundreds of Flex Fuelers being deployed across the globe. But we do have serious growing plans, actually.
What sort of refueling operations are they undertaking? Is it mostly ocean-going ships, or because they're in the ARA, are you doing barges and river-going vessels as well?
It's a mix, actually, Mark. The reason why we chose for inland waterway barges is that they resemble conventional bunkering methodology. So normal bunkerings inside the ARA are done all with inland waterway barges, because it's the most cost-efficient way to bunker. The rules and regulations are quite clear as well. So when we launched the project to have LNG bunkering infrastructure available in ARA, we sort of automatically looked at a inland waterway solution. As I said, it's most accepted by terminals as well. It's not so common to discharge seagoing vessel to seagoing vessel inside the port limits, because it's expensive. So yeah, again, we try to mirror existing bunkering and make it as simple with LNG, which of course is not entirely the case, but there are differences, but at least it looks the same at the moment.
Mm. And you've got the Hyperion recently delivered as well, I believe.
She's not delivered. So we're due to take a final investment decision on it very soon. That barge has been developed quite nicely now. She's quite suitable to cater for various demands, including some of the largest LNG-powered vessels that are out there. And she has, inside the design philosophy, we incorporated as well the trajectory that we see for bio-LNG. And on that basis, we got subsidy awarded for it. So she's still in the making. And we expect to make an announcement very soon on where we're going to build and when she will be operational. For now, she will be there beginning of 2024.
Oh, I see. Okay. What size is she going to be? What kind of capacity?
8,000 cubes.
So it's a pretty big sort of a bunkering vessel. So she will be able to service the big 20,000 TEU container ships.
No, she's actually too small for that as well. The big container vessels, as we see now for CMA CGM, they require up to 18,000 cubes. So, of course, for top-ups, for these type of vessels, it's possible, but we can't deliver the entire quantity requested by that type of owners just yet, which is fine. I think that's also where Titan wants to be at this moment, below the big oil and gas majors, who are very keen to go for the big volumes. And we try to cater for a bit more specialized solutions and different type of vessels that offer more operational freedom, which is suitable for us. For example, tankers is something which requires a different scheduling, which we like.
And you've got the Krios as well, I understand.
Also under development, we made an announcement that we will do the Krios. She will be based, the Krios 1 will be based in Zeebruges. We see quite a bit of uptick in demand for coming from that particular port. Krios is more geared towards a normal international gas carrier, so ITC vessel. Because the Zeebruges is more ocean going, you can't reach that via inland waterways. Mm-hmm. So we took a different approach for the design of the Krios, and we tend to duplicate that as well for other locations where we're currently doing business development.
Right, and is that going to be 8,000 or larger size vessel as it's more seagoing oriented?
No, she's actually smaller than the Hyperion. She will be roughly 4,200 cubes. So enough to cater for some larger tankers, some crews, some of the car carriers that we're currently seeing coming to the market, and also a very nice order book for those kind of vessels. Mm. And Krios is designed to meet that kind of...
She's designed in a way then for the port, for the conditions at that and for the types of ship that call at that port.
Yes, exactly. So more also on the type of ships. So we don't want to have a long or clunky asset alongside a modest sized vessel. For example, the car carriers, they do have quite a good LOA, but going alongside with an 18,000 cube vessel is not the most economical. And then you will have more difficulties on the mooring. Mm-hmm. So with Krios, we think we have a perfect solution to follow or to cater for that kind of demand, especially from car carriers and normal tankers and crews as well.
And these vessels, will they all be able to do SIMOPS, so they can fuel the ship while the ship is alongside loading?
Yeah, that's the idea. And we see that more and more happening. Ports are finally becoming much more comfortable with LNG. The track record for bunkering is there by now. The permitting process that we had to go through in the beginning, so say 4 years ago, to actually conduct a LNG transfer, that was sometimes not funny, to say the least. However, over time, we have clearly seen a change in the bylaws or the appetite of the ports, but also the terminals, because in the end, the port may approve simultaneous operation, but if a terminal is uncomfortable, they still have the liberty to decline on SIMOPS. But in close contact with some of the leading ports, especially here in ARA, they made all these roadmaps where you can safely bunker inside the port. And we see more and more terminals being fairly comfortable and doing it on a very regular basis to have LNG bunkering take place at their premises. So that is one of the key developments that is needed to have LNG bunkering as a long-term viable option for ship owners. Because without SIMOPS, which we have had in the past, where it was just not possible yet, then vessels have to deviate, and then it just gets quite expensive and scheduling-wise much more difficult.
Yeah.
So we're really pleased with this development.
Now, the ports are all being very much encouraged by the European Union in particular, aren't they, to go down the alternative fuels routes. And neither of us has had time to digest this vast report that's come out of the European Commission in the last 24 hours before we were recording this podcast. But I think it's safe to assume that that volumes are going to go up, and we're still at the tiny acorns rather than the massive oak tree stage of LNG bunkering, aren't we? What's your view? How big is the LNG bunker market going to get, say, in ARA region, let alone the rest of the world?
Yeah, it's going to get really, really big, Mark. What we see and have seen already is that a lot of segments have demonstrated that LNG-powered vessels is doable. So from high-powered dredgers to container vessels to car carriers, as we mentioned before, but also smaller applications. So almost every shipping segment has experience with LNG now. With the ever-evolving rules and regulations and the messaging that LNG is a bridging fuel or a stepping stone to comply with further tightening regulations, that's becoming much more clear now. And we're really pleased with how that is going. And we also see there's more media attention. The public awareness of shipping is increasing, from people in ports seeing the fumes from the stack of a cruise vessel to other emissions. And LNG, as of course I'm passionate about this, as the local emissions is something that is, it's not regarded to its full potential just yet. And there's this article from a university in Sweden that actually says LNG is saving lives. So it's actually cleaning up some of the harmful emissions that are emitted inside the port. And with the reduction of no availability of PM, that's very, very beneficial. And I think these local aspects should be considered a bit more prominently as well in the rules and regulations.
And you've got experience as well of delivering bio LNG, haven't you? Which is, you know, the even cleaner version of LNG.
Yeah, exactly. So the message we try to get across now is that LNG is a very good starting point to already reduce the local emissions, but also to reduce the CO2 emissions. And then if you gradually introduce bio LNG into the supply chain, that's quite possible. It's been demonstrated. And the beauty of that is that the compatibility of bio LNG with conventional LNG, it's 100%. So it's very easy to have various blending ratios made available and to gradually start to introduce this bio LNG into the fuel mix, allowing for our customers to gradually increase this in light with their budget as well. Because bio LNG is still, it's more expensive, but if our customer has customers behind it as well who demand further decarbonization, it's already possible. And I think without bringing CMA CGM across too often in such interviews, I think what they're doing is quite good and demonstrating that it's possible to have a carbon reduction target realized right now.
I suppose beyond bio LNG, we also have the prospect of synthetic LNG. There are carbon capture projects going on around the world. I was on a panel yesterday, a Tradewinds panel, and one of my co-panelists was from Berger Bulk, James Marshall, the CEO there. He was saying that they, as a ship owner, are investigating carbon capture. And of course, one of the reasons for carbon capture is not just to try and store the carbon, but to reprocess the carbon so you can recapture carbon dioxide, convert it to carbon monoxide, and process it with hydrogen to make synthetic or e-fuels, including e-LNG. People say, well, that's the most expensive way of developing fuels. But on the other hand, it's also the easiest way of not having to invest in an entire new infrastructure for things like ammonia and hydrogen, because you can use the infrastructure that's already been built. Do you think there's a viable future for things like e-fuels? I mean, presumably, if you're delivering LNG, you hope there will be.
Yes, certainly. I concur with your storyline just now. I couldn't have said it much better myself. So thanks for taking up that big task. Now, yeah, but e-LNG or synthetic LNG, whatever we're going to call it, is a viable pathway into the future. But it all depends on the availability of green hydrogen. And that is the big question mark. Whatever e-fuel you make, I think the advantage of e-LNG or synthetic LNG is that it indeed can fit into the existing infrastructure. Also there's no blend wall or compatibility issues, and you can indeed use the same infrastructure also on board your vessel. But it all depends on the availability of actual green renewable hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And the hydrogen will be the building block of any e-fuel. And then in that respect, it's going to be expensive, but if it's going to be expensive for e-LNG, it's also going to be expensive for any of the other e-fuels. So that's also why we're not necessarily against some of the competing mm-hmm. fuels. We are very much looking to see how we can make the base building block hydrogen, how can we make that economically attractive? And what you on the carbon capture, etc., yes, it will cost something, but it will cost something for every other e-fuel as well. So we see great potential in synthetic LNG, especially if you use it as a balancing for hydrogen production, because you can store e-LNG quite nicely on the water, even in large-scale LNG carriers if needed, if you have excess production, and take it to another place where the market is short of hydrogen or e-LNG. So we see great potential as well on the trading side, because it is LNG is already such a commodity, and it's just a extension of the existing commodity, which is quite important, we believe.
Of course, and LNG is, the technology is well proven now. You know, it's getting on for nearly a century old, isn't it? And it's much easier to liquefy and store natural gas than it is to liquefy and store hydrogen.
Exactly. So that's the rules and regulations are clear. It's all been crystallized now. The last mile application of everybody called small scale LNG. That's well under development already. In ARA, I would say it's ready. So you have us with small and medium sized barges. You have the big ones, and we see now all kind of projects across the globe to make this last mile available. And we are involved in maybe a dozen projects in also in locations outside ARA, where LNG bunkering is requested to capture this current boom in LNG powered fleet being built and ordered.
There are objectors and objections to LNG, of course. You know, the argument about methane slip has gone on for some time, and the well to wake emission argument has been put forward. Presumably you know and you understand those arguments. What's your take on them?
I am fully aware of it, and we have some, for example, methane emissions. There's the clear distinguishment on the production side and the methane slip in the engine. So that's often confused. What we see is on the methane slip in the engine that huge progress has been made over time, and the amount of methane slip that is realized has been dramatically reduced. And we are very confident that with the current technology evolvement, that it will be reduced to close to zero. We hear some very good stories from the OEMs on that. So I'm not overly concerned on that for the long run. We do everything in our power, and we are audited as well to make sure that the supply chain up to the vessel doesn't have any methane emissions. In order to actually be an accredited bunker supplier, you are audited by the various boards, mm-hmm. and we have no slip in our supply unless there's a real accident and we end up in a emergency situation venting, which so far hasn't happened, luckily. But also then you need to report. So I think the last mile for LNG on the small scale side, the emissions are we should look at upstream production emission losses, mm-hmm. but we also should look at it from an oil perspective, because I think on the oil production, some associated gas which is being flared, if it is flared, I'm not sure how much that is taken into consideration for the well to wake for oils. And if anything, some of the associated gas, which is currently captured from in the US, which is actually liquefied, is actually beneficial to have an actual market for it. I wouldn't call it a bio just yet, but as an example, mm-hmm. we should do something with gas, because it is also a part of the oil production. As long as there's need for fuels in general, we have to do something with it. And I think LNG, with its parameters as well, being a cleaner fuel on the local emissions and already doing something on the CO2. I think it's great, and I think actually sometimes a little bit vocal about it. It's better than doing nothing, Mark.
I often hear the argument, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You know, let's do what we can and get started. It's the argument put forward by the likes of Rodolphe Sade at CMACGM, who we've mentioned earlier, and clng.org, of course. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've always, you know, felt some sympathy on the methane slip view, because you compare that, as you have done, to the amount of natural gas flaring that is done at oil wells, and the methane slip is a tiny amount.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm really passionate about this. And again, doing nothing is not an option as far as we are concerned. And there is no silver bullet. And LNG with bio-LNG and e-LNG in the future, I think has a very long lifespan where it can make a difference already and can continue to make a bigger difference with these further carbon-reduced fuels being introduced. And I'm not saying that LNG is the only solution. There may be indeed a pure hydrogen for some short sea, which doesn't require that much energy density, or batteries, or even ammonia or methanol. We are trying not to bash other fuels, and we would expect others to have an open mind to LNG as well. It may not be perfect yet, but it's better than what is currently done with the normal heavy fuel oils and some of the distillates that are being used.
Of course, one of the ways for fuel oil ships to reduce their emissions is simply to slow down. But it occurs to me that if you're burning LNG, you don't have to slow, because you've already cut your emissions by 20%. And do you think that that's going to confer an advantage? Well, I turn that question around. I think that will confer an advantage to ship operators with ships that run on LNG, and that may well make LNG as a marine fuel last longer than a lot of people expect. You know, people say it's a transition fuel, it won't last beyond 2050. But it may be that we could go longer than that, because the infrastructure would have been built. It's been there. You've got drop-in alternatives, greener forms of LNG. So, you know, what would you say is the longevity of the market then?
Yeah, absolutely. And Mark, the longevity is, as far as I'm concerned, endless. If you have ample renewable production and you can convert that to, then I'm not sure if it's called ELNG then anymore, because the question is, should there be an N in it? So it's just a liquid gas that that you're producing. And your point before on slow steaming versus actually making your schedule on time, I think that's quite an important one as well. We just also said that we haven't fully digested the new rules and regulations that are up on us from Europe. But ETS, of course, is going to play a critical part in this. And if you have an LNG-powered engine, which is already reducing CO2, yes, you could either pay less carbon credit, or you get actually carbon credits back, which is good to offset maybe some of your other fleet, because not everybody is running on LNG in its entirety yet. So it's a good balancing act as well to get experience as well right now, because that is also quite important if you run an LNG-powered vessel. So yeah, I think that's going to be quite a game changer as well. Once people start to realize the financial impact of the ETS and then compute that against the savings that they're making for LNG outright on the dollar per ton basis, and then as well on the ETS, on the bill that is going to land upon them, I think LNG is looking very bright, actually.
Yeah.
But that's yet to be further determined, and this is all still proposals, and it will need to be crystallized out. But yeah, I'm absolutely hopeful that it's beneficial for LNG.
I'm sure that the shipyards will be reading that EU report extremely carefully, desperate as they are for a 40-year slump in shipbuilding activity to begin its recovery.
Yeah. Now, the shipyards for now are very busy again. So we had some, not necessarily difficulty, but we did see prices come up as well for our LNG bunker barge at the Hyperion. And the availability of yard slot is not great at the moment. So I think for now, the shipbuilders are happy, but it will be difficult for them to make a, well, they have a portfolio to offer, of course. So how are they going to advise their customer on best-in-class technology and what is possible in the fuel mix? We do see as well that if you are a shipyard which wants to be competing in this current day and age, that LNG is something that is put on the table very, very prominently by now. And luckily, there's a lot of shipyards with experience on building LNG-powered fleet. So that's also actually an encouragement for our lovely fuel.
So yes, Michael, I think that the LNG market, LNG bunkering market, isn't going to be a 20-year market. It's going to have it's going to be around for much longer, for many more years than that. And I think in the short term, it's almost certainly going to confer a commercial advantage to ship owners, especially in the container market, who are operating LNG-powered ships. And I'm sure that's why the ship owners who've gone out to order LNG-powered ships have decided to try and opt for that first mover advantage.
Yeah, and I think what is also going to be more recognized very very soon, because so many people are getting experience with LNG right now, the engine room being this clean, lower maintenance, etc., that was not in the public domain just yet, but people are getting real experience with it, handling the LNG, but also how your vessel actually looks after 10 years, and that you still have squeaky clean engine rooms with no heavy fuel fumes inside. These kind of benefits are only being recognized right, and I'm very much looking forward to ship owners as well speaking out on their experiences with LNG, whether it's positive or negative, especially negative. Let's see how we can improve it, because in the end, this fuel is going to be around for quite a long time, and we should not underestimate the power of these kind of ambassadors or the front runners. And if there's issues, I'm quite sure we can tackle them.
Sure. Yes, I'm sure that in the same way that the fuel oil engine of today is, you know, 30% more efficient than the fuel oil engine of 15 years ago, and many, many times more efficient than a fuel oil engine of a century ago, the same kind of technological development can happen with gas engines. And as we move through brown LNG to bio LNG and then onto synthetic liquid gas, let's not call it LNG if it's synthetic, the market potential will continue for some time to come.
Absolutely.
Well, Michael, we have to stop here. We're running out of time, but thank you so much for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure to converse with you about all things LNG. And I wish you the very best of luck with Titan LNG and the expansion of your fleet. Godspeed to your two new developments. I look forward to being able to see them with my own eyes when I'm finally allowed to travel overseas and get back to ARA.
Excellent. Thanks for having me, Mark. And you're always welcome to visit one of our barges in operation and see what it's like on board an LBV.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, and thank you to all of our listeners. And we'll see you for the next episode of the Ship.Energy podcast. This is Mark Williams signing off for now. Thanks and bye-bye.